Conference, March 20, 1970.
Federal Act that has been proposed in Congress. Members of the Senate, members of the House, plus federal authorities, both from the Narcotics Agency and from the Department of Justice, the Drug Abuse Authority of the state, and other interested people have all been working together for about 3 weeks to try to compile a bill that would be a model bill based on the federal law that has been introduced in Congress. And yesterday they completed the work. They have the bill prepared. It's going to be introduced in both houses today. I think it's going to be introduced in the Senate. I think with almost the entire Senate as sponsors of the bill. Isn't that correct, George?
I think there's 41 sponsors.
41 sponsors of the bill, and in the House, they're not going to try to put all the members of the House on it, but it will be introduced in the House. And yours is here to answer any questions that you may have on this proposal. We think that after having gone over it with George, the committee, the federal authorities, our own drug abuse people, that it will be a model act not only in the state of Maryland, but probably around the country. It's adopted by the General Assembly. Hoping that it will be, but if there's any questions that you have on it. The bill is right long. It's a very lengthy bill.
If I may, on a little bit of background, what actually happened, the Senate Finance Committee during its budget hearing with the Department, Secretary of Health and Mental Hygiene, asked questions about the problem of narcotics and drug abuse. In turn, we discussed it with the leadership of the Senate, and we felt that we would ask Dr. Solomon in to discuss this matter, if you recall, with a committee of the whole. And as a result of that deliberation, where we had a separate session as a committee of the whole, there was members from each of the three major committees of the Senate appointed, and we formed this special committee dealing with drug abuse. Now, what we tried to do in the last month, particularly the last 3 weeks, is bring together everybody we could think of who was professionally concerned with the problem. As the governor mentioned, very fortunate, close enough to Washington, we had the benefit and the use of real professional help from the Department of Justice, more specifically from the people dealing with the Bureau of Dangerous Drugs and Narcotics. We've also had undercover people from the state police, Colonel Du Bois representing the Baltimore Police Department, representing from the governor's office, Drug Abuse Authority, leg men from some of the large metropolitan areas such as Prince George's County that deal with the drug problem daily, people from the Department of Education, just about everybody we could think of, the representatives of the Pharmaceutical Association, so that we could sit down together and see if there wasn't a way we could come up with a comprehensive program, first to repeal the present laws of the state that are antiquated, that don't fit in, and in turn try to develop a comprehensive program. As the governor indicated, the Congress has not yet enacted a federal law. It's passed one house of the Congress, but not the other. They're still holding hearings on it. But they were able, within the Department of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, to come up with a proposed bill that could be submitted to the states. We have taken this as our guideline, and from this expanded by taking scraps and bits, so to speak, of many other bills that were placed into the legislature. There was another comprehensive bill that one of the delegates from Baltimore City sponsored. We took a lot of sections out of that bill and came up basically with a bill that does this. First, is directed to making it extremely difficult on the professional trafficker, professional pusher. Then we established the authority for the control of dangerous drugs and narcotics within the state, which naturally would be in the Department of Health. We define, and this I think is a very key feature, a schedule of drugs. In other words, we classify drugs in four categories. One category being for medical use, another with a high potential use for abuse. another category being for no medical use with a high potential for abuse. Let me just briefly say this, that let's take the one with no medical use and high potential for abuse. There are some 71 drugs, and as you look at the bill, some of the words even have as many as 20 letters in them, that have chemically been developed that could be have very high potential for its use. Heroin, the more common one, commonly referred to, is in this category of 71 drugs. This is the no medical use. Then you have the dangerous drugs that have a high potential for abuse that would come under the accepted medical use category. And we spell these out. This would be your opium, opium-type drugs. There's some 20 of these. Methadone, Governor, comes in this category. Then you have the third category, which deals with the less potential for abuse. These are drugs that are accepted in normal medical practice, but if anyone continually used them to great excess, they could become in somewhat of a moderate physical dependence upon the drug. And we list these drugs in the bill. There's some 16 of these. This would be an excessive use of codeine, as an example. Then the fourth category deals with accepted medical use, which have a low potential for abuse, and there really aren't too many of these. The bill also deals with...
Where does marijuana fit in?
Marijuana fits in the Schedule 1. What we provide in the enforcement section of the bill, which I'll come to in a second, I think would be the best way of approaching it, we have an exception for this. But marijuana is considered by the Federal Bureau of Narcotics as in that area where it has no medical use and does have a high potential for abuse. The bill also spells out the rules and regulations for the enforcement of the Comprehensive Act and clarifies a lot of antiquated language that presently is in the law. A big feature here, I think, when you deal with the penalty section of the bill, let me, before getting into penalties, which is perhaps the thing that becomes more involved, is that we also naturally have the enforcement provisions, and we have set aside a education and research section in the bill so that this ties together with the Drug Abuse Authority, which was introduced last year as an administration measure, and we strengthen the liaison relationship for the and recognize the importance of the Drug Abuse Authority, and also set up a coordinating effort with the Department of Education in this general area. But more specifically on the penalty section, what we have said is this, that to the pusher of a Class 1 hard stuff, Class 1 Schedule 1 I'm actually referring to, this is the guy who manufactures or distributes. We recommend a mandatory minimum of 3 years and up to 20 years imprisonment and a $25,000 fine or both. This would be a felony. But by setting up the classifications, we likewise, in effect, we're under the present law where there's little, if any, distinction between the pusher and the user, and where you have a maximum of 5 years, we spell this out by specifying the class to the violation. In other words, the pusher, the guy who makes this available, can get up to 20 years under the bill and a $25,000 fine. We go down under another schedule that deals with the schedules 1 through 4, which would not be in the pusher category, where there could be up to 7 years and $15,000 fine, which would also be a felony. There seems to be much interest in marijuana. Marijuana for its usage on the first offense, if I'm wrong on these, please correct me, we leave it to the discretion of the court. We take it out of the felony classification. We leave it to the discretion of the court for the first offender, and particularly for the person who has not been previously convicted of any drug or related offense. And we leave it to the court to enter the judgment of guilt and defer as to whether or not this person should be sent to the Drug Abuse Authority or probation and so forth. But we also, at the same time, say if you do it twice, you get a double. In other words, we're saying that you might be able to get discharged the first time, and if you, and under the first time, it's would have had 1 year, isn't it, after that? After the first, a person can be given up to 1 year and a $1,000 fine. But after it happens twice, this automatically doubles. And for the first offender, there's also the expunging of the record. This takes care of the individual that was in his one-time experience at a pot party and doesn't put him in the felony category or puts him in the same classification that a pusher would be involved in. We really threw it to the person who was the wholesaler who goes bad. We give him, what do we throw to him? But this is the legitimate person who is licensed to handle the drug and goes bad. He can get up to a $100,000 fine, 10 years imprisonment. This could be the guy that would be driving a wholesale drug who traditionally has been taking it off the back and delivering it to the pharmacy, who all of a sudden decided to take up the front seat and start pushing it out into the community. He can get up to 10 years, $100,000. The known pusher is the one I refer to who get up to 20 years under the bill. These are the basic broad features of the bill. The bill's about 40-some pages, has a lot of technical terms. Very fortunately for us, we were able to have the benefit of pharmacists, lawyers, pharmacists who are also lawyers, but the federal government seemed to have available. And we took advantage of these people, and they worked long and hard in the last 3 or 4 weeks in an effort to try to help us come up with a good program.
Sure.
I think it'll work.
You've got this mandatory 3-year sentence for pusher.
That's correct.
That's
correct.
Right.
Yes, sir.
What constitutes a pusher? If I'm getting to the party and wants to buy marijuana cigarettes, friend, or boss here.
Yeah, this refers to the language itself is to manufacture, distribute, or to possess a controlled dangerous substance in sufficient quantity to reasonably indicate under all circumstances an intent to either manufacture, distribute, or dispense a controlled dangerous substance. Here would be the discretion of the court to determine what a sufficient quantity would be. We spent considerable time discussing what has been tried in New York where you actually spell in the law quantity. The quantity can vary with the type of drug, and this is virtually impossible to do. This has to be left to discretion. We think, I might say this, the reason for the minimum decision of the Senate committee, and I want to point this out, that the committee to which you referred to, Governor, is a committee of the Senate, and we cooperated to the fullest with a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee and any other interested delegates that cared to drop by, such as Delegate Sklar, who's shown a real interest in and was one of the sponsors of the last year's Drug Abuse Authority. They were invited in, but it wasn't a joint committee as such. But the Senate committee felt that the message of a minimum 3 years was necessary to alert the courts to the legislative intent that we really don't want to see pusher get off.
I was going to ask you about that. There's a section of the code that says that mandatory minimums are not necessarily mandatory. Do you make an exception in this? You make an exception?
Yes, sir. We do.
In other words, it will be really mandatory.
Yes, sir, but we define well who the pusher is.
No, I'm not talking about that. There is
not. You're talking about the provisions in Article 27, Section 63.
Yeah, that right. Says that a judge doesn't have to follow minimums.
Right. That doesn't apply.
That does not apply. You
does
make an
apply.
Exception in
That's
this
right.
one. Yes.
So that we firm the 3 years. This could be the section of the bill that could become controversial, but we feel that we've defined the pusher well enough to know who he is. And we simply say, and we will in our report, would like to emphasize the real importance. One thing that stands out in our judgment is the fact that we brought together all these people that for the first time many of them communicated, that they've been going in different directions. And we think it's terribly important, whether it's through the Bar Association or whether it's through the administrative office of the court, or however it's done, that the judiciary of this state become familiar with this act to its fullest. If it is passed,
it'll take some case law to figure out what reasonable is. I guess. Do you think?
Well, I think this is really an attempt to set down as clear language as possible a model act to cover the entire subject matter. And as George has said, we discussed yesterday that how to bring into this the judiciary to make them acquainted with all of the provisions, the intent, and all. And I think there will be some seminars held, if the law is enacted, to acquaint the bench and the judges with the contents of this act so that they'll understand what the legislature was driving at and the intent of the legislature. The only feature in there that may cause debate in the legislature, one of the features, is this mandatory sentence that you just spoke about. There is some little divided opinion on that in that area, but the majority of the people that worked on it felt that this was the proper way to approach it. But overall, I think the act will give the courts, for the first time compiled in one act, all of the law affecting the narcotics in the state of Maryland, that they will have a comprehensive act which will deal very effectively the whole subject matter. It draws a line, really, between possession and possession with intent to dispense, or possession with intent to sell. It creates a new crime, really, of possession with intent.
That's correct.
To dispense or...
It doesn't leave the ultimate decision with the court, as you described it a few minutes ago. The decision as to whether the quantity that the defendant had constitutes intent to sell is not a decision ultimately.
Yes, but in looking at the bill closely, the definition, of which there are many, many definitions, it pretty well helps to pinpoint when a person is really engaged. For instance, just having a syringe... alone is not enough, but having all the other paraphernalia that goes with an operation.
It would be fairly obvious to the court that the fellow comes in with one or two capsules of heroin. He could be a user. But if he comes in with 200 capsules, no question that he's in the business.
Right. I'm thinking more about a case involving marijuana, perhaps, where one joint would make it hard to say that the defendant was a pusher, but if he had a several pounds or something, it might be a different situation. But somewhere in a case like that, the court has to decide, isn't that right? Under this act,
they have to do that today.
Yeah.
There's no real difference there.
Right.
You take a case in that there can be five counts in an indictment of selling, of transporting, of possession, and the court, after hearing the facts, has to decide what degree the defendant was involved.
Those are usual multiple
counts
anywhere.
That would be unchanged under the
new law. No, except that they change it by making the, as I understand it, it's changed by making the amount important in determining whether or not the man is a seller or is a user.
But remember, the
quantity becomes an important determining factor.
Right, and the schedule of drugs, by putting the drug in its right schedule, which has really been developed through many, many years by the federal...
But you have heroin and marijuana in the same schedule.
Yes, because both of them are for non-medical use. Both have a high potential use for abuse. But we make this exception of the use of marijuana as you're excused the first go-around if you're at a pot party, but after that 1 year and $1,000 fine, and don't do it again. Kind of thing.
And the record, did you say the record is expunged on the first offense?
Yes.
It would seem to me that it's going to be far easier to...
Well, he has to fulfill the conditions of the direction of the court, whether this would be going to jail for a weekend or whatever.
I don't know. He could set standard. For example, he might be able to say you have to go to the drug abuse control and work with them under 1 year suspension of their sentence.
But on compliance with the conditions of credibility.
Yeah. I think there's one other thing that I sort of missed in the beginning, Governor, that it's obvious, but I think it should be said, that the legislature and the executive both feel very strongly that this is perhaps one of the most pressing problems, if not the most pressing problem of our time. It no longer has a so-called social level. It's some information that has come to me during these deliberations about kids that have gone to a Coke party and somebody slipped an LSD into their Coke and the child ends up in Phipps Clinic for the rest of their life. These things are tragedies. And it's something that we have to meet head on. Now, the state of Ohio is an example. We looked around all the country to see who has really made any effort. Most people have made piecemeal efforts. Ohio simply made it tough on the pusher by a mandatory 20-year sentence. So I asked the Federal Bureau of Narcotics what happened. They said, well, instead of having 9 men in Cleveland as an example for the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, we had 2. But we shipped the problem to the adjoining states. Well, we certainly didn't want to do that. But at the same time, we wanted to protect the innocent that get involved and distinguish between them and the real professional police.
Just for the record, Governor, you're supporting this bill in detail, as,
yeah,
whether, as well as in...
Yeah.
Senator, how much is this pattern on the proposed federal recodification of
that? Well, this bill follows, to a greater degree, the Federal Model Act. But please understand that the Federal Model Act that is submitted for use within the states isn't contingent upon the passage of the Federal Act, which has now passed one house of the Federal Congress. What's real nice about this, you see, while we're here today, somebody could be in some laboratory developing a new type dangerous drug. We even have provisions to take care of this within a 60-day period, and after certain hearings and so forth by the Secretary of Health and Mental Hygiene, that this can be declared as a very dangerous drug and take it off the market without the legislature having to come back and enact another law.
A lot of
60 days.
A lot of judges reportedly are waiting for the legislature to act before they give their decisions in a bunch of marijuana cases. Is this going to be an emergency bill, or does it take effect in January 1st?
It is not an emergency bill now, no, sir.
What will this do to all the other bills that have been submitted so far? Will this be withdrawn or superseded? Or?
Well, most of the other bills that had, you know, many bills had merit, but most of those that were workable are incorporated in this total act.
I don't think it does anything to any other bills. It's just another bill introduced in the legislature, but they've tried to take into account all of the bills that have been introduced to see if they could be incorporated into this overall approach to the problem. And a lot of those were taken up, were considered, and some of it's incorporated.
So if one drug bill were to be passed, this would be the one that you want to be passed?
Well, we think that this is a comprehensive, total approach to the problem and probably covers every aspect of the narcotics problem today.
George, do you have any other drug bills in the county or the police?
No, sir, this is it.
So there'll be no drug bills in the Senate that are going to reach the floor anymore, right?
Well, I think you have one which left the penalty section out last year inadvertently that's moving now to the Senate. It's coming out of the Judicial Proceedings Committee. Now, the Senate plans, I think, is only fair to bring this out, as I understand it's probably happening now. The bill is being introduced in the Senate, naturally goes to the Rules Committee. The President told me that he plans to send it to the Senate as a committee of the whole, and not to any standing committee, since we have operated in unison during our last 30 days or so of deliberations. Thereby, we'll immediately get to work on a hearing and discussion of the bill as a committee at large.
Governor, taking note of your series of seminars on drug abuse, two questions. One, what group will they be aimed at? Like the parents and teachers and so forth?
No, what we were talking about before was with the judiciary, the judges.
Yes.
To have a meeting with them first to get them acquainted with the content of this bill.
I was referring to that, but referring to the series of 11 seminars, which I believe start tomorrow.
You're right about the people that will be involved in that. Yeah, we've also had other seminars with the police, the enforcement officials.
But these will be geared more towards parents and teachers.
Right.
And with that in mind, what long-range programs do you have, or perhaps at the end of the stage, to take care of the addict and also the question of drug education?
Well, this is what the Drug Abuse Authority is doing right now. They're getting ready to open their first clinic, and they want to establish a series of clinics around to handle these very problems that you're talking about. That's the direction, that's the thrust that they're taking.
About the question of drug education in the schools and
the Department of Education at the present time is preparing to introduce they're planning a program to have education in the schools on the whole drug problem. And I think there's something in the bill.
We tie this together.
That goes right to this very problem.
Who might ask, what is the status of Senator Stefan's bill?
Senator Stefan's bill is not needed with the passage of this bill.
I realize that, but what is the status of it?
That is, as far as I know, in the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee.
Governor, have any other states undertaken a similar comprehensive revision?
I think there's one other state, isn't there, George?
South Dakota.
Governor,
we approach it differently than they do, but they've made
They made a similar.
Make a similar, after all,
let's get on another subject. Yeah. Governor, how much money is going to be in your supplemental budget for Morgan State?
In the last supplemental budget, there was a figure of $130,000 for the establishment. I think it was $120,000 for the establishment of an urban institute, an institute on urban problems. We're changing the language of that, that if the federal, or rather Ford Foundation funds are not available, that they can put this money to other uses. We're adding an additional $271,000. Addition of that money, so that the $120,000 will be freed up and $271,000 more will be added in the supplemental budget.
For Morgan.
Right.
Governor, when will that budget be coming down?
Probably this afternoon or this evening. Well, wait a minute now. I'm not sure that it will be prepared this afternoon or this evening. It depends on when the budget itself is starting to move through the legislature. I understood that the House is going to move the budget today. This supplemental will be added in the other House, so that it will go over in the Senate, actually be added in the Senate when the budget reaches the Senate.
Governor, the $9.4 million to committees that have proposed, is that about what you're expecting?
I haven't seen the cuts that the committees have proposed as of this time. They discussed the cuts in the welfare and the money that they have eliminated in the welfare administration. And they eliminated the money from the administration of the welfare department has been put back in the supplemental budget to be added to a rent supplement. As a rent supplement. This is the committee's wishes and this is what we've done.
What will we expect in supplemental budget to hold?
I haven't gotten all the figures this time. I can't tell you. It will be a little over $1 million.
Governor, the Prince George's House delegation has killed a bill to enable the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority to acquire DC Transit and other companies and also to sell bonds at an interest rate above 6%. And the transit people feel this is essential. They have it. It's already got preliminary approval in the Senate. See any chance of your interceding to try to keep this bill alive get through the legislature?
I'd be glad to intercede if they would indicate to me that they have an interest in it.
I mean, they might have indicated
to you, but I haven't heard from them.
That who has an interest in it?
Whoever you're talking about, I haven't heard anything about it.
Well, they say the Prince George delegation has killed it, so you want other people to come to you.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. You're telling me that a bill was killed in the Prince George's County delegation. There's a great deal of interest in it, but if that interest is there, it isn't here. We haven't heard about it.
So you'll leave it at that.
It's a local bill. We'll
probably be up here. But no, Jim, what I'm telling you is that you say there's a great deal of interest in it. It's a central bill, but we haven't heard of it.
I believe you.
We don't follow local bills. No, I wouldn't say at this point. I don't think there's much reason to even consider it.
In other words, you don't think it's going to pass?
No, I didn't say that. So I don't think there's reason at this point to even worry about considering it.
How about the Colby County Greyhound track? Do you feel the same about that?
I feel exactly the same at this point. There's no reason to.
All right, let's go through the letting. How about the pledge to the flag?
I understand that somebody, some reporters wrote an article that some members of my staff have interceded in concern of that bill, and that's absolutely, completely some prayer bill or something. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I was coming to that now.
I thought you were. We haven't, absolutely no member of my staff has discussed this bill with any member of the legislature at any time, and I think some of the reporters that write these kinds of bills ought to check with us first before they write it, and I'm serious about it. They write stories about this and trying to indicate that the staff is injecting themselves in things that we have not, as administration problems, gotten into. And I think before you write those kind of stories, it might be a good idea to find out if there's any substance to it. And in this instance, there's absolutely none, because the members of our staff were down in the Senate last night talking to some of the legislators about an administration bill. You immediately make an assumption it has no basis in fact, and I just don't think it's right.
What bill was it that they were discussing last night?
There were two bills that we were vitally interested in. One was the environmental bill, and the other one was the court bill. And so both of those bills...
The racehorse bill.
The what?
The racing bill.
Racing bill? No, we didn't get involved in that. But they were talking about the Environmental Services Act, which there was an amendment being offered, and there was another bill, the court bill, that was taken up by the Finance Committee. And both of these bills were administration bills that we are interested in.
We lost one and won one.
We won one, and we're negotiating on the other.
Well, you, the
friendship bill seems to be in a little bit of trouble, Governor. Try to do something about it.
I think that'll probably move out of the House.
The administration is not supporting that legislative council horse racing bill and the consolidating the tracks and increasing.
We haven't had the, I think you've seen the list of bills that the administration is supporting, and that's not on the list.
Morris Wilde wasn't talking about that racehorse bill last night.
As far as I know, he was not. If he was, it was without any knowledge on my part. But I have no knowledge that he was.
Governor, do you have any more information on Ralph Brown, where he is, when the trial will start, further